Welcome to Forward Thinking, a podcast from Foundation Source. I'm your host, Dori Krieger. Foundation Source is the nation's largest provider of comprehensive support services for private foundations, bringing unparalleled knowledge and expertise to over 1,200 clients across the country. The best ideas in philanthropy aren't always the tried and true. Trailblazing entrepreneurs and next-generation philanthropists are transforming the sector with inspiring ideas and innovative strategies. Join us as we explore the advice, experience, and insight of some of the creative minds shaping our collective future. My guest is a pioneer who has used his keen entrepreneurial skills to build three businesses founded on advancing a social mission. Peter Thum is a leader in creating businesses that do good while doing well. As the founder of Ethos Water, Peter turned his idea of getting clean water to children into a successful social venture that was acquired by Starbucks. He then went on to co-found Foundry 47, an organization that takes AK-47s from war zones in Africa and turns them into watches, jewelry, and other accessories. Peter's most recent venture targets the reduction of gun violence in the United States. He is the founder and CEO of Liberty United, a company that recycles illegal guns and ammunition into jewelry. A portion of the profits funds programs to protect at-risk children from gun violence. Peter, thank you for joining me in the studio today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've successfully built three brands, businesses, and self-funding philanthropic engines directly connecting consumption to a related social mission. Why start a social venture rather than start a nonprofit?
When I first started doing this, it was a long time ago in the history of social entrepreneurship. And so the first people who had started businesses were like this one were Paul Newman and Ben and Jerry of Ben and Jerry's and Anita Roddick, who founded The Body Shop. And so that was sort of the first crop of people who started companies that in some way, either through their supply chain or giving away a portion, or in Paul Newman's case, all of the profits of their businesses, they were trying to achieve some social aim. And I guess I would say that that Ethos Water was in the second wave of those things. For me, I was in Africa. I became interested in by meeting people who didn't have access to clean water while I was working in Africa. I became interested in trying to figure out a way to do something about that problem. And friends of mine at the time said that it would make sense to start an organization and raise money to invest in safe water projects in developing countries. But when I started looking at it, what I realized was that there were already plenty of organizations that lacked scale, both in terms of funding and their operating capabilities. And so to me, it seemed that the primary problem was raising the profile of the problem rather than starting another not-for-profit, which would effectively compete with the existing organizations, which to me made no sense. And so I think to try to answer your question more succinctly, the reason to start a company mm-hmm. or a for-profit entity to do something about a problem, I think is to fill a gap that you see that not-for-profits or government cannot serve.
And what is it about organizing as a for-profit that helps you achieve that?
Well, I think that if you look at the spectrum of possibilities, on the one end of the spectrum, you begin with government. At the other end of the spectrum, you have pure for-profit public companies that are trading on the stock market. And so in that spectrum, there are different ways to address or even cause social problems. A for-profit company, I think, has the ability to probably do a better job of changing an issue in a certain way and raising awareness about that issue than a not-for-profit organization, primarily because the company, if it's successful, is generating value to sustain itself through the creation of value for customers. And so I think that because the pool of philanthropic and charitable dollars is relatively fixed, that the for-profit company has the ability or the potential to create an entirely new pool of capital and awareness that doesn't exist when it begins its operations.
So you've built three companies now yeah. with a social mission. What does it take to build a successful one?
It's very similar to building a regular company, actually. I think it's very difficult. It takes a good idea and good product or service. And I think it takes an orientation toward the customer and understanding their needs and serving those needs as well as or better than other people in the market, other players in the market.
So let's talk about Liberty United, and I'm wearing one of your cuffs here.
Thank you. So
Liberty United, as I mentioned in the intro, recycles illegal guns and turns them into jewelry. When you just talked about knowing your customer, who is the customer for Liberty United?
Probably the primary customer for Liberty United is someone who already feels that accessibility of guns in the United States is a problem. There are people who fall in love with the designs of our pieces and hear about them and think that it's cool that they have something that's either made out of a recycled gun or recycled bullet shell casings.
So what inspired the creation of Liberty United? Was there a deeply personal connection? I know I've heard you speak about that, that at the root of a successful social enterprise, there is this deeply personal connection of wanting to make a change.
My personal connection started, I think, in Africa, meeting kids with guns and starting to work on that issue through Foundry 47. And so I met young boys who had AK-47s, guns that were taller than they were. And I was with my fiance, and she was my girlfriend at the time. We were traveling, and I had no expectation that we would be running into people with guns, little kids with guns. And so a lot of things went through my mind. The impact on us in terms of a risk perspective, the impact on the water investments that we had made. We'd put $2 million into programs for safe water in places where previously there hadn't been this kind of risk. And then I thought about the fact that when we make these kinds of investments, most of the time, the security component is not part of the investment. At least at the time, it wasn't. Africa's changed quite a bit in the last 15 years since this happened, or excuse me, the last roughly 10 years since this happened. And so I think that if you look into it, security costs can be as much as 30 to 40% of every dollar that you donate. And so that's a huge number when you think about investing in development. I think the fact that we can work on development in health, in women's issues, in water, food, shelter, and in a way ignore security issues because they're uncomfortable for us to confront, I think that's at best unfortunate and probably foolhardy. And so that set of thoughts led me to start doing something about it in Africa, which is get the AK-47s and try to make them into something interesting and inspiring. And then in 2012, we started working on doing the same thing in the United States. And the inspiration in the United States really was born out of that. And then if my wife and I both had known people who were killed in gun violence. And so that was something that was very personal and direct.
So let's shift our focus to the United States and gun violence here and Liberty United. And help me understand, forgive me for the simplicity of my question, but how does the purchase of the cuff, like the one I'm wearing now, really make a difference?
The Liberty United model works like this. This is your bracelet. This bracelet costs $145. 25% of the net profits of this bracelet go to either our foundation or directly to a not-for-profit organization. And if it goes into our foundation, it's ultimately going to be donated to a not-for-profit. It's just sort of like a parking lot. And we invest in programs for children living in the worst neighborhoods in the cities that have provided us the material to make the jewelry. So this particular bracelet is made out of recycled bullet shell casings from evidence in probably Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, we partner with the Mural Arts program. That program effectively inverts the relationship between recidivism and staying out of jail. And so normally 9 out of 10 people would go back to jail. People coming out of this program, only 10% of them go back to jail. We also fund programs, after school programs for kids in Newburgh, in Chicago, in Philadelphia, in Syracuse. And these are kids who live in very violent neighborhoods and who otherwise would not have a place to go and do things after school. And these kids are taught music, math, reading, writing, arts. And then it acts as a bridging mechanism. So kids who otherwise would be out in very dangerous places after school oftentimes are spending that period of time learning skills, both educationally and job skills, that will help them get out of that neighborhood and that kind of situation in the future.
How did you choose those four communities?
We actually talked to a lot of communities, and these are the ones where we were able to establish a relationship with both the mayor's office and the police. And that was necessary because the mayor's office is saying, we want to work with you, and the police are enabling us to get destroyed gun material and bullet shell casing material that we can use to produce these pieces.
What would they do with that material if you hadn't taken it? Where would it go, in a landfill?
So bullet shell casings would and gun material would be recycled. Usually a company locally would either destroy it or melt it, and then it would be smelted down and used, go back into the stream of useful metal. I think the most important thing, though, is that this vehicle is creating something out of a negative, not just something out of nothing. And it's providing opportunities now in the United States to over 1,100 children who otherwise would have had to find funding somewhere else.
You know, it feels like we're seeing some act of gun violence in the news a lot, increased media attention. How has that, or has it at all, impacted your work at Liberty United?
Typically, the news media responds to shootings in schools, mass shootings in schools, or mass shootings at office buildings. And I think that the reason that they do that is because it's newsworthy and it's something that the public is afraid of, and it makes for good headlines. And those are one part of the gun violence problem in the United States. Numerically, the much bigger component of gun violence in the United States is people living in inner cities, most of the time minorities, being shot in numbers that are many multiples of the people who die in these random mass shooting events. And those are unfortunately not newsworthy. And I think that it's a shame almost of that the United States, that we are willing to accept that there are tens of thousands of people dying because of gun violence in our country, in part due to the fact that we have very lax control over arms in this country. We have no idea who has them or in what numbers. And these people die and nothing is written about it and no one knows. And I think in a way people don't care. And I think that part of what we are doing is providing people with a link between the removal of a weapon from circulation and the provision of opportunity to these kids living in these neighborhoods, and giving them an opportunity to have a life, first of all, to simply survive, and then to have a life that is fruitful outside of this socioeconomic trap that they live in.
So when I'm thinking about our listeners who are founders and trustees of private foundations, and they do make social investments, how do they go about evaluating a social venture?
Evaluating a social venture is probably exactly like evaluating a startup. I would start by looking at the people and their experience and why they're doing it and their plans. And then I would say, where is your product? Or where is your service? Show it to me. How much progress have you made? Do you have customers yet? How much are they paying? Or what did you think they were going to pay? How does what you're doing already align with the strategy that you started out with?
The first thing I think you mentioned was look at the person, look at the people.
Yeah.
What are the characteristics of a successful social entrepreneur?
One of the hard things about social enterprises, social entrepreneurship, is that a person who's going to be a social entrepreneur is responding to something that a set of conditions that have never existed for them before. So they may never have thought about being a social entrepreneur before this thing happened in their lives. And in a way, I would say it's, if it's too calculated, it's almost a negative. If they have decided because they went to some school for 3 years to learn how to be a social entrepreneur that this is what they're going to do, they may be too methodical. It may be too theoretical. To go back to one of your earlier questions, in a way, what's the point of social entrepreneurship? It's to have an explosive hundredfold, thousandfold, 10,000-fold change in something where instead of investing a dollar and having 80 cents go to the purpose, if you want to have a sea change where you have a thousandfold change, you need to invest a dollar and get back $1,000. And the people who are going to do that for you probably won't have been thinking about it for 5 years. They will have this undeniable need to solve a problem, and they may not be historically prepared to do it, but they won't let themselves rest until they've at least failed courageously and maybe even succeeded. But separating those people out requires giving them the chance. And the right people to support, I think, will have already started taking the chance. They're already going to have their necks on the line, and they'll come to you and say, I need help, I need more money, I need people. And that's the point at which it's very good to support them.
I want to come back to Liberty United and the movement that you're trying to build to end gun violence, and think again about private foundations. And what are your suggestions for them in getting involved in this work? How can foundations be supportive?
So I'm specifically going to speak about how they could help us. So I think foundations could make donations to our not-for-profit, which we would then in turn invest in programs that we're supporting. They could invest in our company. I think foundations are usually less likely to invest from Corpus in startups. They can, and investing in mission-related startups I think is a very good idea.
So it's really thinking about foundations as angel investors.
Well, I think that would be the most powerful thing because that's the greatest source of financial value, right? I mean, if you think about the pockets of foundations, their endowment is invested, and that investment can be invested in any way that they choose. And then you have their private source of finances, and they may already be doing investing directly or through family offices. So they may be making decisions themselves, or their family offices may be investing in venture capital or doing angel investings. So I think in a way, these different structures are set up to separate different parts of people's lives. And to do this effectively, I think people have to think in an integrated way and think about, is it necessary that I separate my angel investing from my mission investing?
I think one question that would be really helpful for listeners to hear is to understand how these companies are actually formed. How are Foundry and Liberty United incorporated?
So Foundry 47 is set up as a limited liability company, and we have around 20 angel investors in that company. And Liberty United is set up as a C corporation, and we have about 20 investors in that organization as well. There is cross-fertilization. Many of the people are the same who invested in those two organizations. And then we also set up a 501c3 not-for-profit organization, primarily because there are people who either don't want to buy watches or jewelry, but they think, I really love what you're doing. We'd like to support it. Can we give to this organization that allows us to accept philanthropic donations? And then the money that's donated to that organization accompanies money from the for-profit Foundry 47 or from Liberty United and is given out as grants to our beneficiary not-for-profit programs.
Got it. Yeah, that's really helpful. That's exactly how private foundations who get inspired by this could participate if they're more comfortable with the grant making rather than the impact investing.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter, for joining me today and sharing your story about social entrepreneurism and, more importantly, Liberty United.
Thank you. My pleasure.
To learn more about this segment of Forward Thinking and our work at Foundation Source, please visit our resources page at foundationsource.com. While you're there, tell us what you thought of this segment and who you'd like to hear on a future one. We'd love to hear from you. Our podcast is produced by Gabrielle Galanek. I'm your host, Dori Krieger. Mm-hmm.